Encuentro Radio es periodismo, derechos, igualdad, dignidad, mujeres, inclusión, masculinidad, arte, expresión, libertad, esperanza, cultura, ecumenismo, literatura, historia y análisis. Pero en realidad somos una gran familia. Bienvenidos y bienvenidas a Encuentro Radio. Comunícate con nosotros a través de nuestro WhatsApp 302-521-2342. No te despegues de nuestra programación. Sigue con Encuentro Radio.
From Colombia,
the Philippines,
the United States,
Germany,
Kenya,
Austria,
we are bringing our voices together to reflect on gender and social justice.
A multicultural look in the mirror at our society.
Welcome to Mirror Voices.
Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Colombian time.
Brought to you by CEPALC and Encuentro Radio.
With my girl Drew, Cameron D and Destiny, Charlie's Angels, come on. Question, tell me what you think about me. I buy my own diamonds and I buy my own rings. Only ring your celly when I'm feeling lonely. When it's all over, please get up and leave. Question, tell me how you feel about this. Try to control me, boy, you get dismissed. Pay my own condo and I pay my own bills. Always 50-50 in relationships. The shoes on my feet, I fall. The clothes I'm wearing, I fall. Taught and sacrificed to get what I get. Ladies, it ain't easy being independent. Question, how'd you like this knowledge that I brought? Bragging on that cash that he gave you is the front. If you're gonna brag, make sure it's your money you fund. Depend on no one else to give you what you want.
On my feet, I I'm wearing.
Everyone, welcome back to another episode of Mirrored Voices here on Encuentro Radio. My name is Hannah, and I'm here with Michelle and Mariana. How are you both today?
Hello, I'm good. I'm sleepy all the time.
Oh, of course.
But I'm happy to be here. How are you guys?
I'm great. Happy to be here as always for yet another episode. Worried about Hannah, though. How are you feeling, Hannah?
I'm okay. This week I have a bit of a cold. So yesterday I was at home resting. Today I have a mask on in the studio since there's not a lot of ventilation. I don't want to get my colleagues sick, but hopefully you can hear me just fine. Today we are... Hopefully I don't lose my voice during the program too. We'll see. This is the most I've spoken in a couple days. But today we are kind of doing a part two, a continuation of our conversation last week, because as always, there's just so much information that we don't get to touch on. And last week we had started the program asking about how you learned about money, how you learned to handle money. And we realized it was mostly women in our family who taught the girls like us how to save, how to handle money. This week I wanted to ask, what was your first job? Tell us about your first job and like how you spent the money, or what your experience is like. Since I asked the question, I'll go first. What do you think?
Yeah.
That seems fair. I think my first job, from what I can remember, I think the first job I had was working at a summer camp. I was a summer camp counselor. So it was a seasonal job, which was nice to do. Like, I think I had graduated high school, had the summer job, and then most of the money I used to buy my books for school, for college, because university school supplies is just way more expensive. So I think I spent most of it doing that. But I had a great time working at a summer camp, you know. And it's similar to, I mean, working with kids is always fun and exhausting, and a bonding experience with the other people who are going through all of that, and where I made some of my closest friends. So what were your first jobs like? Whoever wants to go first.
I would say my first job was as working as a PA educator, because I remember that was the first paying job I ever got. And, well, it was very overwhelming, like, because we were, like, having workshops with NGOs from the United States, where they would, like, pay a certain amount to, like, all the participants and a little bit more to the facilitators. And I remember being so excited because the money was, like, clean bills. So so nice. Clean, here's dollar bills. Well, it was overwhelming. I don't remember what I did with them. I'm pretty sure I kept them for a while just to stare at them. Because in my country, there's this thing where it's sort of difficult to use clean bills because you're like, this money is so precious. I cannot use it. It's better to give it, you know. So when you eventually have to use it, it's heartbreaking, especially when you get, like, change where it's, like, dirty bills and you're like, I give you a clean bill. But, yeah, I guess that was my first
I know
job.
Some people in Colombia that, I mean, maybe elsewhere, but I only met, like, one or two people here that, like, wash their money. They wash the bills. Like, I mean, sure, do you?
Well,
I don't know, because or maybe it was like a something that started during COVID of like people wanting to like disinfect everything that entered their home, and I saw like a couple wet bills on the sink drying. Like, oh, okay,
yeah.
That works too.
Well. I remember, in that job, I not have money because we was with my grandparent, but I remember that in a moment in the house, my grandmother started selling soup for everyone. With my sister, we need, like, go to the neighborhood screaming, like, la sopa, la sopa, la sopa. I guess that was, like, my first job, but they not paid anything for that. But maybe the job that I have, like, a pay was in the school Lindo Americano. Was, like, trying to, in vacation in December, like, helping not just my mom, my uncle, like, open the door and trying to take care of the kids. Obviously, it was something like that. I remember. Yeah.
If anyone listening wants to share with us your first experience having a job, what your first job was, feel free to send us a message or to just say hi and tell us that you're listening. That is always welcomed. We have a couple songs today about this topic of like women and economic empowerment. I had to adjust my search. At first, I almost Google searched like songs about women and money, and that was not not exactly the results that I wanted.
Okay.
More women empowerment and money. So we started off with Destiny's Child, classic, Independent Women, part one. And we'll go to maybe a little bit of Ariana Grande right now before we get into our first topic with, I think, Mariana will kick us off today. So we'll be right back.
Is it Seven Rings?
Yes, of course.
In Colombia, women and girls continue to suffer poverty, discrimination, and exploitation. 51.6% of poor people in Colombia are women. Additional, women continue to have worse indicators than men in aspects such like employment, unemployment, and care work. Within the home had usually been delegated to women. Because of this, the 78% of all unpaid care work in household is done but by women. Then 89% of women provide care compared to 61% of men. A woman spends twice as much time as men on care, 7 hours and 14 minutes on average per day, compared to 3 hours and 25 minutes for men. So this sexual division of unpaid care work like show that like all the responsibility that the woman have in this situation. For the work. This woman work an average of 14 hours and 49 minutes per day, and men work 12 hours and 39 minutes. Women work an average of 2 hours and 10 minutes more per day than men. So, the presence of women in the senior management position doesn't not exceed like 20%. While in management, it reached to 40%, and dominate support and base position with 60%. So, to trying to empowering women to participate fully in a sector and all levels of economy activities is essential to building like a strong economies, like establish more stable and fair society. For this article that I found, it's for UN.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
United
Nations. I saw in Spanish.
Right. Oh,
so
no.
it's difficult for me. I was like, oh no.
Yeah, UN.
Yeah.
UN Women. Probably.
So, for the UN Women, economy empowerment is related to the elimination of violence against women and political participation, since the three major areas of work are interrelated.
Mm-hmm.
But it's difficult. Because actually, suppose the law here in Colombia said that in the government we need to have like the 31% of women
mm-hmm.
in the government, and I right now I guess it's like 27. I know
which is
it's
still like
not
even the goal is less than equality. Even
yeah.
the goal is not 50-50.
We know that we have women there, but actually it's difficult because a lot of people not be like agree that the woman be. There, and obviously we have women there that not be like support, like the women have more space in the economy, because not all the women that be in the government believe that the women need work.
Right, just because they're women doesn't mean
they
necessarily fight for women's rights, even though it shouldn't be like that. You know, you shouldn't be working against yourself, but unfortunately,
yeah,
internalized machismo.
Yeah, I guess it's important that the women have the opportunity to try to transform their own lives, but actually, I forgot the word. Let me look. Homework,
mm-hmm.
it's not pay here in Colombia.
Yeah,
you can work in other house, but you're not gonna receive like a good pay for that. And the idea, I guess, for this government is that happen, because there's a lot of women that the only money that they have to give their family is that job,
mm-hmm.
and I guess it's difficult because it actually is sad that you can saw in the street like old women trying to selling some things because they don't have any possibility to have like other job. So I guess when you go out and you can saw in the street, there's more women selling like candies or
mm-hmm.
maybe cookies or something like that in the street than the men.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's like the situation in Colombia. It's not so good because we realize that the women work more time than the men, not just in the job, in the house too, and
mm-hmm.
sometimes the men don't do anything. But yeah, that's like a small explanation how is Colombia about the women's economy.
Yeah, and I remember coming across a video from many years ago, I think it was called Cine Mujer, like a short, showing like all of the work that a mother does in this example, in the morning,
yeah.
like waking up, getting breakfast ready, getting the kids ready, helping her husband get dressed, getting the mail or the milk delivery, you know, all of these things and everything that she does. And at the end of the video, the kids are like playing on the playground, and a kid asks, you know, oh, and what does your mom do? And the kid answers, nothing, she's at home. So it's like
but
all
she's
of that
doing more.
All of that work becomes invisible. And I don't think it's a coincidence that it's work that's primarily done by women and then ignored as if it doesn't
yeah.
exist. Whereas if the women weren't doing that work, if no one was doing that work in the household, it would be very noticeable. You know, you don't have food, you don't have a clean space, or clean clothes, or, you know, all those things. So it's the kind of stuff that people only notice when it's not there. And I think that's just another way of invalidating women's contribution and women's work. Not that it has to be women's work. Like, there's no gender requirement in who needs to clean the dishes or cook all of those things. But culturally, we've taught society to think of it as women's work and then think of it as not work at all, which is just unfair.
It's so unfair.
Yeah. I think we can go to a little bit of music. Dolly Parton this time. And then we'll be right back.
Stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the street, the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5.
Talking about the three women who have been awarded the Nobel Prize in Economics. So, the Nobel Prize in Economics is something that is officially known as the, I don't know how to pronounce this, because it's in Swedish. But anyways, it was made in memory of Alfred Nobel, which is an award established by Sweden's Central Bank. And it was first awarded in 1969. And since 1969, there's only been three women versus 99 men who have won this award. So those three women are, the first one is Elinor Ostrom. She won it in 2009. She was the first woman to win the Nobel Prize in Economics. She was recognized for analysis of economic governance, especially the commons. And then the second one was Esther Duflo in 2019. She won the prize for her experimental approach to alleviating global poverty. And then we have Claudia Golding, who I'm going to be talking about a lot. She won the award in 2023, and she was awarded the prize for advancing the understanding of women's outcomes in labor markets. So what makes Claudia like an interesting figure is because she based her thesis mostly on gender gaps and salaries.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had quite a lot to say based on in her papers, and her papers went on to be used in many political and economic spaces because what she wrote was very impactful. So she says that economics is more than just stocks and bonds. She says that part of the problem is that economics is often stereotypical, associated with finance, money, and banking. This narrow perception may not appeal to everyone. Women in particular tend to be drawn to areas that have direct bearing on social challenges. And then she also says some of these areas include health, development, education, and gender inequality. And then she, for example, says labor economics study issues like family leave policies and gender pay gaps, areas that directly affect women's lives. So basically what she talks about is how the gender gap in salaries affect women and how it's an issue that is not addressed a lot. And how, for example, Mariana was saying that women do a lot of work and is not accredited and they don't get paid for that. She also speaks about how all of that is part of the work we do as women, but it's not recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And it's precisely for that reason why some women fail to get the level of education they want because they have so many responsibilities at work, at home. And it's also part of the reason why when even we have women in the economy working, but when they make the decision to be mothers, they end up staying at home. And when they try to go back to working, it proves to be difficult because
mm-hmm.
They'll otherwise be seen as not like great for the positions that they would want to go back into. And then she also says that not only are women underrepresented as economists, economics as a field has historically ignored the role women play, even as the study of family economics gained traction in the 1970s. The pivotal role of women were often sidelined. So basically, she's coming in as like a feminist and fighting for women's rights. And in her acceptance speech, she also said that my win is not just for me, but it's a victory for all the women out there. I'm standing for women and putting a light on all the issues that have been otherwise not seen as important when it comes to women. So we hope that a lot of institutions will take into consideration her study and also try to make the world a better place, hopefully. And hopefully that is women will keep on winning these awards so that three. We'll have a significant number. Because, I mean,
three.
How does it make sense that
only three
versus 99 men?
Yeah.
Only
that's,
three.
That's so... coincidence or not, talking before the program, I also have a few information on Claudia Goldin.
Oh, wow.
Go figure. I'll add on just a few things. I mean, Michelle has already mentioned so much.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I have a little anecdote about Claudia Goldin when she was studying economics, which, again, as you mentioned, is a field that not a lot of women are represented
mm-hmm.
In economics. She studied American economic history, including the impact of slavery and the Civil War in the economy in the south of the United States. And there's kind of an anecdote of her, like, hitchhiking through the region and staying with local women in the region, or, you know, staying even with the archivists at her house, things like that, and then, like, returning back to school and then asking for, like, the receipts and the reimbursements for the hotels and everything. And she just, she's like, no, I don't have any. I didn't know that was an option, or didn't choose to take it. But it says her colleagues and professors say that kind of attitude and approach to research and investigating also helps give, like, a different perspective. So having connection with local people can help you see things and putting into context the, like, data.
Sure.
Which is also important when talking about women in economics, of, you know, having that perspective and understanding about the struggles that women face and about their realities can give context to some of those, like, numbers and research and data, which is really important, and which for so long had been missing, because there aren't as many women in the field. Men don't necessarily realize. I mean, men can be intentionally excluding women's voices, but I think often it can also be unintentional. They don't have that experience, and so they aren't, you know, cognizant of it, or aren't thinking about it until you get someone else with a different background and a different life and different identity who comes in and says, well, what about this? And they're like, oh, I've never thought about that before. And that happens in every field of study, in entertainment, in everything. Through her studies, obviously, she realized that one of the most important factors in the labor force and economy had to do with women. And she identified four phases in the labor force participation rate for women going back to, like, the 1900s. And she calls the first three phases evolutionary, of women, like, starting to get into the workforce, often on, like, an intermittent schedule, kind of depending on the needs of the family, or women who got into the workforce but had no power really in decision-making or deciding what kind of work they wanted to do, or how much they would get paid, or, you know, any of those things. It wasn't really up to them. And then you get this, like, she calls a quiet revolution phase in the late 1970s. And that's a shift in women start to plan not just a job, not just enter the workforce, but a career. Mm-hmm. And their identity starts to become part of that career. And they're making more decisions about what they want to do, what they want to study, maybe where they want to work. All of those things. And that's one of the most important changes in women seeing their identity also in a career, and being able to make those decisions. And it increased in big part due to increased investment in education going on. And she mentions access to contraception, like you said. Being able to plan your family and your career is really important in order to reach those goals. And her work is still inspiring research into how marriage, contraception, and gender all interact with economy historically and in the future. She also founded, in 2014, the Undergraduate Women in Economics Program to try to help more women interested in the field, give them a mentor who can kind of help them out, so that we can see more and more studies and understand how women impact the economy, especially now that we're seeing that the question of contraception and family planning is more and more difficult in the U.S., and what that means also for the economy. Because obviously if women have more economic power and freedom, it helps the entire economy. It helps everyone. It's always a good thing. So societies that have that smaller wage gap between gender are better off. And I thought one also interesting that she had mentioned was, I mean, everyone acknowledges that the gender wage gap exists. Often it's portrayed in the sense of, like, oh, well, women have less access to opportunities and to education. But part of what her research showed was men and women are often kind of on the same level, more or less, until it comes to starting having children. And that's when you really see that gap starts to grow and grow and grow, and most women are just never really able to catch up to their male counterpart the same way. And obviously, lots of reasons for that, which we've mentioned already. But it's interesting how they kind of start off on a similar level.
True.
And then there's that big dip once women start having children. So which is why that, like, contraception and family planning is so important, because if it's going to have such a big impact on your life, I mean, in every sense, including economically, it's important that you have, you know, control over, you can decide when you want to do that and when you're ready to do that.
I agree. And I also think feminism mm-hmm. also influences how things go. And also I think the kind of partner that you have, like
absolutely.
The father of your babies, also contributes, because if it's someone who's like patriarchal and is like, I'm the head of the house, mm-hmm. I'll take care of everything, you just stay at home, then it becomes a problem. But if you have a partner who understands that you also have your dreams and your goals that you want to achieve, such households are the desirable mm-hmm. because you know that even if the society is against how we're doing things, at least in our household, we know we're equals and we understand each other. And if I want to proceed and do some work, I know we'll make a plan with my husband or whatever, and then I'll be able to succeed mm-hmm. in the field of economy. So I think there are a lot of factors that influence this.
Yeah, and I mean, choosing to be a stay-at-home mom or dad, you know, is always a valid choice. The difference is, like, is it your choice or is it something that's forced on you?
True.
Is the main thing. Like, do you have other career goals that you're not allowed to pursue because of that?
Mm.
Or is it what you want, you know? And more we hear people talking about, there's young people these days don't want to have children and they're not having babies mm. and the population is going down and all of these things.
Yeah.
Usually by older generations talking about, like, well, why don't young people want children? Why don't, you know? And I think it's kind of like, well, look at,
you know how much
exactly
girls have a baby?
I know. Like, I was reading something from an author. I refuse to say a name because it's controversial. But then she said the problem is not that the younger generation are taking decisions not to have children, but it's that they don't want to have children completely, and that will end up affecting
mm.
the population of the world, like the general population.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you trying to say, woman?
And I guess it's not just the economy. I guess for a lot of things that happen in the world,
mm-hmm.
like, if you have a girl, you never know what's going on with your girl, because, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's, like, a lot of danger men outside. So
mm-hmm.
it's not just the economy, because a lot of, in my case, a lot of young people said that. It's like, how much costs have a baby?
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. It's so expensive because you need to pay the school and the high school, and you need, if you want, support the university. But also, you don't know, like, the security that your baby is going to have. And I know, like, for a close person that have, like, a baby so young and later have other baby. And, like, right now it's, like, thinking, like, I'm tired to be mom
mm-hmm.
because just have 27, I guess, and have two kids. So it's difficult because in that moment that I get pregnant, never realized the situation. I never realized that the two parents of the two babies not be responsible.
Mm.
So all the pressure is for her. But she never believed, like, the situation that she's going to live right now. But I guess for that moment not be available, the abortion
mm-hmm.
free right now, just the three options that we have for the 2006, I guess. But yeah, it's difficult. Later you realize that maybe your idea of your life is changing and mm-hmm. you need to take care about two babies and your babies is growing up, and it's difficult because you're not alone, but you know, have like the support that maybe a parent's gonna do. So yeah, sometimes you need to think so good what you are gonna do with your life and when it's the correct moment to have a baby, because I guess a lot of young women not believe the economic situation, not believe that maybe she's like doing the career or she out there doing like the high school. So all the things that maybe you dream in a moment of your life, it's like you need to stop. Because you have a baby to take care. Obviously, you can do it later, but it's not like the life that maybe you want to have it.
I agree. And I feel like we also have some type of pressure where we have the biological clock waiting on us, so we cannot delay it for as long as we would necessarily want to. But then one of the fears I've had ever since I was young was like, okay, you have a kid, you're a mom, this kid is looking up to you about what the kid is going to eat, what the kid's going to wear, school fees, and things like that. And then maybe you don't have the finances that are enough, because like people from long ago used to just have babies and swing it, like just go with the flow. And
well, and whatever job they had was enough to pay for, you know, my grandma would tell me how she like made it through college by like nannying or babysitting or having like these jobs. And my grandma would say, that's impossible today. Like, it's impossible to pay for a university education with a normal job. Most people have to take out student loans, and they're in debt, and then they're trying to pay back that debt. And then, so it's like the costs of everything have increased, and the salary, what people earn, has not increased proportionately.
That is true. I just have that fear that you have this kid, and maybe you'll get, like, you know how sometimes there are retrenchments at work, sorry, and then you get fired, and you don't have a job, and you have a kid. It's difficult,
guys. It is.
It is difficult. Like, right now, like, for example, a person like me, I'm just trying to make sure that I have a future that is stable, a stable income, trying to save, like the importance of saving, like we were talking in the program last week. And then you start thinking, a kid right now. No. No.
I love babies.
Other people's babies. Yeah.
I love the babies, and I'm so happy with the babies, but not mine right now.
Other people's babies. And that's what I was talking to Phoebe, who was once with us a couple of months ago, and we were like, the goal is not to have our own babies. The goal is to be rich aunties, spoil other people's babies, travel, and, you know, just be the cool aunties that spoil the children, other people's children, not our own.
Yeah, I think the conversation about, which I've been hearing a lot lately, I think definitely the economics and financial stability and situation is a big factor. Not the only factor, of course. There are many factors that go into deciding to have children or not.
True.
But it's interconnected with this conversation on the economy, on the wage gap, on debt, on everything. And I, you know, I don't have children yet. I'm 29. That's, to me, I'm like, I'm not ready yet. and I think that's, you know, respectable, whatever someone's choice is, and everyone deserves to have a choice in that family planning, in that life planning, in that financial planning, all of those things.
True, and also the fact that when it comes to education and paying school fees, like, usually you find that organizations that help people that are not able to afford that, it's usually, like, disadvantaged children living with disabilities, orphans, but they're actually like single mothers out there mm-hmm. who are struggling with school fees. And it's really heartbreaking when you're like, especially in the kind of setup I grew up in, where sometimes we'd have times in class where the principal would come and then they'll be like, the people I'm going to call out have to step outside and go home and talk to their parents. If they've already paid and it's and a mistake on our part, they have to come back with the receipts.
Oh, geez. And they would pull you out of class for that?
They would. Oh, man. And there were even times where there'd be, like, guards stationed at the gates, like, show us your receipt and your pass. If you don't have receipts, go back home. And it was very heartbreaking because sometimes it would be only just, like, 5 or 6 children in a class of 50 students. Mm-hmm. And it's really heartbreaking.
Hmm. Getting called out in front of all of your classmates like that is, that's messed up.
Yeah, but I remember something like that in my school, like in high school, like the last moment I be there, like check, like the backup receipt that you have, if you not pay, you can go to class because you need to pay. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my friend was like, what I'm going to do? My parents don't have money. Was mm-hmm. like, I don't know. Because I have, like, the opportunity that my dad and my mom can pay that. But it was, like, a lot of people don't have the same opportunity. Mm-hmm. And actually, the school was, like, cheaper than more than other that, like, be in that sector. But I guess it's important that in the school, like, teach you, like, how you can manage your money. Mm-hmm. Because that if you don't know that, maybe you take, like, a decision that you believe that is correct, but later you said, like, maybe not now, maybe it was mm-hmm. not the best decision. So I guess it's important that the girls and the boy know, like, the all option that they have to decide what they want to do with their life. And that's not happened, and that's, like, so complicated. Because in the school, not talk about maybe, like, you need to, like, know what you're going to do with your life. That's mm-hmm. not happen.
Hmm, yeah. We're going to go to our last song break, and then we'll come back to say goodbye for another week here on Mirrored Voices. that was Donna Summer. She works hard for the money.
We all do.
So thank you, everyone, for joining us for today's discussion. Any final thoughts? Anything to say before we sign off?
Take care of the money, please.
You work hard for the money. Take care of it.
Yeah, and, well, I would like to say if we know people who want to participate in the economy as women, we should also support them. And also,
yeah, support women businesses.
Yeah, support our own so that we try in a way to bridge the gap between the sexes and representation of women in economics.
Yeah, and having your own money to be able to spend also gives you that power and that decision making of these are the type of businesses and products that I want to support.
Mm-hmm.
So locally owned, women-owned businesses, black-owned businesses, you know, things that are doing good for the community. And you also have that power to choose to stop buying, if you can, other things that are harming the environment, harming communities. So you can also kind of see your finances as that kind of empowerment as well, and that decision-making. People say sometimes, like, vote with your dollar. Like, what you choose to put money into does say a lot.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So thank you, everyone.
Thank you,
Anna. Have a great rest of your week, and tune back in here for another episode of Mirrored Voices next Wednesday at 2 p.m. Colombian time.
Bye.
To find, but I can't get him off my mind.